Welcome to the Brexit Podcast. I'm your host, Jennifer Han, and today's episode is a bit of a weird one. Tim talked to stand-up comedian and former Peace Party candidate Tommy Holgate, who, according to Tim, is just about the quirkiest character he's ever worked with, which is really saying something. They discuss what good can be found in the referendum result, why Jeremy Corbyn as Prime Minister and a Britain remaining in the EU would be the ideal scenario, and why drug use should be decriminalised. Now, I know what you're thinking, and yes, it's just as entertaining as it sounds. So, as always, if you enjoy the podcast, please rate and subscribe on your podcast platform of choice. And if you still can't get enough, you can also find us at brexitpodcast.com and on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Brexit Podcast.
This week's guest is, in fact, a miracle worker. Or at least he likes to say so. After amassing 35 stitches to the head over the course of a 10-year drinking habit, which included two brain scans and waking up in a straitjacket after a film premiere, the teetotal vegan former Sun journalist, former national lottery mascot, has spent the last 3 years retraining in holistic topics including herbalism, clinical nutrition, sports psychology, acupressure, colour therapy, crystal healing, stress management and life coaching. Then ran in the 2015 general election for the Peace Party. 31-year-old stand-up comic is now focusing his energies on motivational talks by taking a one-man show called Man in the Miracle to the Edinburgh Fringe. This will be his seventh festival in 9 years. Welcome to the Brexit Podcast, Tommy Holgate.
Hello, Tim Hemming. Thank you for that lovely introduction. When I hear those words said out loud, it sounds like a spoof human that you're talking about there. But I can assure you it's all true. I'm delighted to speak to you. How are you doing?
I'm all right, thank you. I'm all right, but probably not as well as you. I believe that you've just landed in Edinburgh for the Fringe. So what's the mood like up there?
The mood is very excitable, I would say. The shows don't start for another couple of days. There's posters up everywhere. There's a lot of excitable tourists, ranging from, you know, families with toddlers and whatnot to kind of more elderly folk looking around. I'm stood just in the Omni Centre at the minute. I've just been to the gym. I've had a 40-minute sauna, so any remaining toxins that were lingering around the system have now escaped through the pores, and I'm very excited to go and get stuck in to working miracles. Like, as you said in the introduction, I'm a sort of miracle worker. I think we're all miracle workers in a way, Tim, and that's what the show is going to be about this year. It's called Man in the Miracle, and I'm very excited to empower people with the true knowledge of the divine existence of their being.
Very good. Normally we can get the plug in towards the end of the show, but I think we've hit it with a heavy sledgehammer right at the start. But having met you a few times, Tommy, you're anything but toxic, my friend. In fact, we've particularly got you on because what you are is sort of relentlessly optimistic. And with the subject of Brexit, it sort of does conjure an awful lot of doom mongery, but I imagine it also provides a rich vein for comedy talent to tap into. So is there a lot of the Brexit feel? Do you think people will be taking the mic, so to speak, over the next month?
I would say so, definitely, yes. I think that a lot of comedians will have had to rewrite their shows in the month before the Fringe, particularly with the utter surprise of Brexit and then, you know, Cameron going, Osborne going, you know, Boris Johnson going. You know, it's just an absolute buzz, isn't it? Which, looking at the political spectrum at the minute, could cause one to lose faith in humanity. But being such an optimist, as you quite rightly state, it sort of has made me giggle a little bit. And I think it's, on a positive note, brought people together because they realise that the public are far more worldly wise than the politicians. You know, like, we're all, basically, we should all be mates. And the politicians, I wouldn't say can do one, because they're not my words, but it's exposed the absolute farce that is politics in the UK, hasn't it? Would you agree? How have you felt about it since it's all happened?
Well, Tom, my place obviously here is to be completely unbiased and give others an opportunity to voice their comment. But I do think it certainly feels like the public has spoken more than any other time I can I can certainly ever remember. Now, look, when you stood in 2015 for the Peace Party, so you have touched on the murky world of politics. What was your own personal experience of dealing with politicians and rubbing up against them?
First of all, I love the tone of your voice there when you said murky world of politics.
Yeah, well, the rubbing up against, I thought, was particularly poignant.
It was, there was certainly some friction in the rooms. I found it to be an interesting experience because I was standing for peace, which meant that I was bringing something new to the table, whereas a lot of the other political parties were just selling the Labour Party or just selling the Conservative Party, whereas I was standing there saying peace is possible, which is a fact, by the way. Peace is literally possible in a spectrum of infinite possibility. If you were to say peace is not possible, that will only ever be an opinion. So from my personal experience, I found it very pleasant because whenever I spoke, people were at least intrigued and they were quite happy to hear somebody talking about something fresh. But also, because being part of a smaller party meant I didn't have to toe a party line, it meant I could bring some personal opinion and belief to the local debates. And it allowed me to talk about things like the truth behind money creation or the lack of truth in the education system, for example. Like I remember being told that Christopher Columbus discovered America as opposed to killed millions of weaponless Indians. And being able to say these things in a live environment as a Peace Party candidate was somewhat shocking in a good way to the local crowds. And the response was generally that they wished I was the Labour candidate. I stood in Chesterfield, and their candidate, the current MP for Chesterfield, is called Toby Perkins, and he was the chairperson of Liz Kendall's campaign against Jeremy Corbyn, which did not endear him to the local electorate. And furthermore, Toby Perkins has been campaigning for Owen Smith against Jeremy Corbyn, and a lot of the people in Chesterfield are very pro-Corbyn, and thus Toby Perkins has become a bit of an outcast in his own constituency, which I think is happening across the board with the Labour Party at the minute. But to answer the question more specifically, what was my experience like? It was actually very stressful to try and represent peace. But then constantly being asked the question, what do you plan to do about ISIS? I was thinking, I don't really know what I plan to do about ISIS, because I firmly believe that peace starts within each of us as an individual. So for me, peace begins with broccoli and tai chi and filtered water and that sort of thing. So if someone says, how are you going to tackle ISIS? If I say broccoli and breathing, they're going to think I'm some sort of joke. So it was interesting, put it that way. But the Peace Party's official stance on the EU was that we wanted to stay in because of the fact that Winston
bringing
Churchill...
Bringing everybody together.
Bringing everybody together, yeah. And it was deemed, I think Winston Churchill did say that it was formed as a sort of a peacemaking operation. So that was the Peace Party stance. But then on a personal level, at the time, I was quite keen to see the devolution of power wherever possible. And I think that it's good to see control handed back to local communities in as much of a situation as possible. So it really is. It's six of one and half a dozen of the other, isn't it?
Yeah.
And as it turned out, it was 52% of one and 48% of the other. But
which is very, very, very close. Now, I will ask you about your own views in a minute because they do sound interesting. And also, I think you're quite a fan of Corbyn. But just when you were saying about the peace is a possibility on the infinite spectrum of possibilities, that line actually reminded me of Jim Carrey's character in Dumb and Dumber when he's out to get his dream girl. And she says, not if it was one in a million. And he says, so you're saying there's a chance? And
yeah.
I thought, actually, that probably says more about me and actually the sort of doctrine we're fed on a regular basis, that I can be so cynical about everything. But it's great that there's still some hope there with Tom.
No, well,
even if
I take,
it's more
I
with
take
you
that.
Than me.
Well, there is a chance, though, isn't there? I think one in a million. If there's one in a million, if there's 999,999...
Well, your math is better than mine, my friend.
What I can't remember how many others there's in a million other than one. But if there's all them people saying peace isn't possible, and I'm the only one saying it is, I still don't mind. It just means I'll shout louder, Tim.
Good.
I'll get my loud hailer out.
That's another show altogether. Now, let me tell me your own view. Let's wind the clock back a bit. June the 23rd was when the nation decided just that it wanted to leave the EU. Where were you? What did you think? And how did you vote?
At the time, I wasn't registered to vote because I was in Portugal at the time. And so, yeah, I was out of the country. But I guess I would have voted to stay in the EU because I was in the EU at the time. You know, if we weren't in the EU, I wouldn't have been able to be living in Portugal. So that would have been my stance. When I got home shortly afterwards and my house was being plastered, I got chatting to one of the plasterers. He said, "Oh, it's great, isn't it? We finally got our independence." And I said to him, "When were you being repressed? You know, it's not Independence Day. It's very different, very different to that."
And was your plasterer English?
Yes, he was. Yeah. And he was decent, but you know, I think that harking back to the how I would have voted, I do recall saying in some of the debates last year that I was a big fan of the EU, and I was particularly a big fan of Portugal's decriminalisation of drugs. Which you're chuckling because you know me quite well. But, you know, I'm a teetotal man these days. But I think that it is wise to pursue that course of action because it's led to a drop in the level of suicide caused by a sort of drug-related woe, if you wish. And also crime has dropped as a result and regulation of the quality of substances has increased. So it's less dangerous. I mean, I think these days, to talk about decriminalisation of drugs isn't so radical as it used to be. So we could take Portugal's lead on that. I think that Switzerland, the Swiss referendum model is nice. You know, if we had more referendums and direct democracy was in place, then the public could have their say on major law changes and would feel at least more represented in Parliament. And then also Finland's education system is one to be admired because Finland consistently tops international education charts despite their lack of exam factory education conditions. Like now in the UK, kids are getting tested at the age of 4 and 5 in maths because ultimately people like Boris Johnson want us to be able to compete with Singapore at maths, you know, so that in the future England and Britain can be higher up the international education tables, so it would be good for our economy. But what it boils down to is because Gordon Brown sold off the gold 20 years ago, four-year-olds are now getting anxiety, and it doesn't seem fair. So I'm saying, let's have a look at Finland for schools, let's have a look at Switzerland for democracy, and let's have a look at Portugal for drugs.
Do you think us leaving the EU makes those changes less likely or more likely to happen, though?
Oh, a very good question. I think it would make it less likely, yeah, especially with the government that's currently in. I think that they will be quite staunch and stubborn with their approach to social policy. And I think that, yeah, being away from the EU with a Conservative government is sort of as bad as one could hope for in terms of the dice being rolled. In an ideal world, we'd be in the EU with a Labour government. And there is still a slight chance of that. So, you know, there's probably more than a 1 in a million chance of that happening, particularly with the Corbyn mania that is occurring, and as you quite rightly suggested, I am a massive fan of that man.
So I've got two questions. Firstly, the EU as a whole, if we look at the EU as an entity, we are still in it, how do you think it is politically aligned? To the left, to the right, fairly centrist? How would you see it currently?
Currently? Well, I'm going off what the former Greek economics minister said on an Owen Jones interview. I'm a big fan of Owen Jones from The Guardian. I can't pronounce his second name, Yanis Varoufakis. I think he said that our best bet is to stay in the EU with a left-wing government, which I was really rehashing his point there, because the top table of the EU seems to be chock full of more right-wing governments. So, yeah, the EU seems pretty right-wing. Britain's pretty right-wing at the minute, and I'm really quite left-wing, so I would like to, yeah, to see Corbyn sitting on that top table in some capacity.
You said Corbyn mania. Is that really true?
Well, as we speak, It is a day after a rally in Liverpool at which 10,000 people turned up to. So I would say absolutely, I think it's getting stronger, but the stronger and the larger it gets, the more the largely right-wing press are attacking him. I absolutely do think it's Corbyn Mania. I'm fully behind him. And I've got his name emblazoned across a T-shirt that is on my body as we speak.
So what are the particular traits of Jeremy Corbyn that you really, that endear him to you, Tom?
I think his historic historic sort of trait of standing up for his beliefs for many decades. That was what got me to join the Labour Party in the end. So I ran for Peace Party, took a little break from politics. Then Corbyn was running for the leadership of the Labour Party, and I found out that he was the chair of the Stop the War Coalition. So I suppose his peaceful political persuasion is what really got me on board, because when I stood for the Peace Party, it was because demilitarisation and unilateral disarmament wasn't part of any major party's policies. And then seeing Corbyn involved made me realise, hang on, you can have these beliefs and still get to a very high position in a major party and have a chance to voice those beliefs in the House of Commons. I suppose his peaceful political persuasion, ultimately. His calm demeanour and his lack of bowing to the money men and women of the world.
And on the flip side of that, there's obviously been some fairly right-wing influential figures in the debate. Perhaps you might say that some of them have hijacked the debate ahead of the EU referendum. What are your view on the likes of the Nigel Farages of this world?
Well, I'm sure as a man, if I were to be sat there with him and I was to look into his eyes, I would love him unconditionally, because that's how I feel towards every human being. And that is true. A lot of people hear that and treat it with scepticism, but I do believe that we are all fellow members of the same spirit and that we should be working together to help humanity progress towards a Christ consciousness state, which is all about embodying unconditional love. And that is, you know, quite a sort of seemingly heavy topic that is difficult to make humorous, which is what I'll be doing this month. But Farage, like I say, as a human being, I love him, but I think that he's just a caricature and that he plays up to his image and he's really just filling a role in society. If he wasn't doing it, somebody else probably would be, in the same way that Katie Hopkins is who she is. But, you know, I'm sure she's all right if you were to sit down with her and talk to her about certain things. But she's just a caricature and she's filling a role in society. If she wasn't doing it, somebody else would.
Yeah, but then I guess these people, they do strike enough chords with members of society to influence them.
They seem to be doing, yeah, but it's through the divide and rule tactic, isn't it? They're focusing too much on the differences between demographics and not enough on the similarities. And I think the sooner that we can all acknowledge the fact that we have a hell of a lot in common, not least the fact that we've all got trillions of cells in our body that are carrying out thousands of tasks per second and regenerating on a level that is basically miraculous because it is not yet explained by science, that when we focus on those similarities, we can realise that we are all, you know, we are all one, Tim. That's what it all boils down to, just trying to find different ways to say it.
So you're optimistic now about the future as we move inexorably towards leaving the European Union. Are you positive still?
If I'm totally honest, I've sort of stopped, I've stopped thinking about what might happen or what might not happen, depending on, you know, this or that, and trying to focus on what I can do in each day to bring about joy to everyone that I encounter, because that's all I'm really in control of. So in terms of optimism going forward, yes, because even if it goes tits up, then tragedy brings people together, doesn't it? You know, and when you look at what Boris Johnson did with how quickly he stood down and then Farage stood down and then everyone found out that £350 million figure was just absolute bunkum and that it was never going to go to the NHS, then the public all of a sudden kind of almost became more matey with each other. It was like, oh, right, so we've all been lied to then. Okay, they're the ones to blame. Let's all be mates. Mm. So even if it goes all cack-handed, then there will be some good come out of it.
And some of these people that are tearing shreds off one another on social media, and some of them seem really genuinely worried and afraid about what's now the future for our country. Are there any quick tips that you could give them? The Tommy Holgate School of Holistic Make Yourself Better?
I would always bring it back to what we can do individually. And for me, that involves just knowing that I'm going to love the next person that I encounter. So I don't care about, I care about everyone and how they're doing, but I don't really care about what people are saying on Twitter or who is winning a debate or losing a debate. I care more about making eye contact with the bus driver and smiling and wishing him a good day. So I think that, you know, taking ourselves outside of our own being and worrying less about
is that when you're crossing the roads on your rollerblades in front of his bus?
Yes, yeah, and they usually stop, and if they don't, then that luckily I've got a very hard head, Tim. I've not had any stitches in the last 5 years. I'm very proud. But in terms of tips for how to, like, you know, remain optimistic when one is worrying greatly about this EU malarkey, you know, it'll all pass, won't it? At the end of the day, we'll all become dust, and world peace will occur. It's just, will humans be around to see it?
Well, Tom, that's a very upbeat ending. Thanks ever so much.
That's it for today. I really hope you enjoyed the show, and if you did, please do feel free to subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher so you'll be notified whenever we upload a new episode and you'll be able to tune in. In the meantime, you can find us at brexitpodcast.com and on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at brexitpodcast. The show is produced by Jennifer Han, Tim Hemming, and Warren Pohl, and our theme song is Cool Vibes by Kevin McLeod.